Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of the Senate Transportation Committee to order. The time is 1:34 p.m. We are in Butchovich, room 205, in the nation's most beautiful snowy capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Today is Tuesday, March 3rd, 2026. Members present are Senator Stedman, Senator Tobin, Senator Keel, Senator Rauscher, and myself, Senator Bjorkman. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Welcome everyone to Senate Transportation. Please turn off or silence your cell phones and join with me in welcoming our recording secretary, Heather Ramseth, and our LAO moderator, Zach Lawthorne. Today, we will hear a presentation from the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities on the use of advanced construction and federal funds for state projects. Here from the department, we have Deputy Commissioner Catherine Keith, Lauren Little, Adam Moser, and Doug Colwaite. Deputy Commissioner and crew, whomever of you would like to come up first, we welcome you to Senate Transportation. Please state your names and affiliation for the record and begin your presentation.
All right, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Catherine Keith, I'm Deputy Commissioner with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. With me, we have several members of the department. We have Adam Moser, Program Management Chief. He's with the Program Management and Administration Division. In his role, he works with federal aid, with federal highways on obligations, project control. We have Lauren Little, our Chief Engineer, and she's also Acting Northern Region Director, along with Division Director of the Project Delivery Division. So Lauren oversees our engineering standards, planning, project development, pre-construction, along with Northern Region Maintenance and Operations and Construction. And we have Doug Colwaite, our Statewide Environmental Program Manager, that's in the Project Delivery Division, and he oversees environmental compliance, including NEPA, Section 106, Cultural Resource Review, along with other federal requirements. So for the topic at hand, there really is no better team here than those we have assembled, and I hope you ask many technical questions. This will be the group to be able to answer them to the best of our ability. Okay. I just wanted to start out with an announcement that our statewide transportation improvement program, the new rolling STIP, 2026 to 2029, is now out for our pre-release review. We've talked a bit about the new approach for this next four-year STIP and wanted to have this early technical review from our Metropolitan Planning Organization, our MPO partners, Western Federal Lands Highway Division, along with Bureau of Indian Affairs, Federal Highways Administration, Federal Transit Administration, those folks that have something to do with projects being programmed specifically in our documents, along with being involved with fiscal constraint tables. So they're looking at these now. So our goal is to get that feedback this week, followed by another week of internal document reworking as needed, and then this will be out for public comment on, we're targeting March 15th. So this document isn't out necessarily on public portals, but if there is an interest in having an early review of the document, as legislators, please reach out and let us know. Andy Mills can provide that, and then happy to answer any questions, but look forward to more comprehensive comment period for 45 days once that goes out for public comment.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. I think the committee would very much appreciate having copies of that document. Thank you.
And with that,
Senator Stedman has a question.
Just on that note, Mr. Chairman, I think that would be a good idea. We can get a hold of Mr. Mills. And my concern is that projects in my district are actually going to be built. They're not just put in there to appease particular individuals or groups. I'm not interested in roads being put in that DOT has no interest and will never be built being in the plan. So we'll have that conversation because I think there is at least one. So we'll go from there.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, yes, absolutely. We hear you and we'll get the committee links to the document. And I will be needing to attend another hearing, so I'm going to hand it over to Adam Moser to start talking through advanced construction, but we'll be available for questions.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Senator Rauscher has a question.
Yeah, thank you. While we're here on this slide, through the chair, I was wondering, the review period is agency review. Do you have these comments? Are they written comments from the agency?
Yeah.
And are we allowed to read those?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Rauscher, we expect a bit more informality than that, not formal written comments, but more even phone dialogue about understanding any errors in fiscal constraint or if there's numbers that aren't adding up. So pretty nuanced work in progress sessions. We don't have comments back yet, but it's a minimal time period, 10 days. So as they come in, it's absolutely available to the public and we can share those when we get comments in. But we do expect these to be a bit more informal and then have the written comments come during public comment period.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Please continue.
Thank you.
All right. For the record, Adam Moser. And for our first slide, just an overview of what we'll cover in more detail in slides to come. Advanced construction has been around in one form or another under the Federal Aid Highway Administration programs since the late 1950s, and that has continued to evolve through subsequent transportation funding bills. The biggest probably advancement there was in the 1990s under ICE-T transportation funding bill, which then said for the management of AC and fiscal constraint, we want you to program your multiple year carry forwards of your AC in your STIP. And so that's what you will find as you look at our STIP. When we're carrying AC balances on a project over multiple years, that is programmed in our STIP. And that was really one of the bigger advancements that was made over the years of this. But the reason that this has been around for so long and in some form is because of the basic mechanisms and uses that it provides a state DOT, and that is to continue to advance projects, to find the best times to bid those projects while managing the flow of federal apportionment funds. All at the same time. AC does not stop any federal approvals. It requires all the same federal approvals for every type of project. It just delays the obligation of the federal funds on that project for a period of time. I'll move on to the next slide if there are no questions there.
Senator Tobin has a question.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious about risk. How do you calculate in risk? We continue to see things in Washington be incredibly volatile, and this idea of committing us to things far in advance that may not necessarily be able to pull down federal dollars.
Yes. Through the chair, Senator Tobin, we do cover that throughout several slides here. If I can, I'll kind of work through the slides and we'll get to some of those risk factors. And there's actually at the end specific discussion of risk there. Okay. So part of that to Senator Tobin's question, as far as risk factors, yes. What is your AC balance in relationship to your annual funding amounts that you're receiving in apportionment and limitation? So there are two things that we're focused on when we're running a federal aid highway program here is the actual dollars in revenue that we're receiving on an annual basis from the Federal Aid Highway Administration. And then also the limitation amount. Limitation is what is passed annually by Congress that allows us to spend those dollars. And we'll go into that in a little bit more detail here, but that is roughly about 90% of the actual apportionment of revenue dollars that we're receiving in any given year. This chart here is showing historically over 20 years of AC balances in the state of Alaska. So the blue bars being that raw number of what our AC balance is. That has not been, so we've asked the feds, we're going to advance these projects, but we have not obligated the federal funds on them yet. That's the blue bar. The red is in proportion in relationship to our annual limitation amounts, roughly 90% of the total revenue that we're receiving in formula funds in a given year. So you can see around 2006, big spike. That was there was a big project. I think around $70+ million was AC'd on extending the road here in Juneau out to Cascade Point at that time, or close to. Most recently, our bigger spikes have come from ACing balances on the Cooper Landing Bypass project.
Senator Keel has a question.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. So we didn't spend $70 million, I don't recall. How does this chart reflect what – does this chart reflect what got done with the AC and what didn't, what got walked back?
It would show – so in any given year after 2006, if we obligate or we – AC'd and moved that project forward, it did not actually come to being built in 2006 or something, then yeah, that AC would have came off the books one way or the other. The project would have been canceled. There would have been no financial negative impacts to that, to the state, on the federal side at least. And then generally in any given year, we're also paying down those AC balances. So as you, and we'll work through how that works out, say during August redistribution when we have additional funds available or additional limitation, that is when it usually we would pay down those AC balances and convert that AC on a project.
So just to follow.
Senator Keel.
Thanks. So I guess, does this chart give us any insight on into how many of these projects got done, how many of these projects didn't get done? I think there's a sense in general that if you AC a project, you put it on the credit card, but you're going to build the thing. And so if that's not necessarily the case, how should we read this?
This chart does not, because it is aggregate of just AC balances and our annual funding revenue or limitation as it relates to revenue. We can certainly look into that. I think generally when we AC a project, we complete the vast majority of projects that we move to construction. It is very rare that a project moves to a construction phase and is AC'd and is not completed.
Thanks.
Okay. So on this slide, we're looking at the big changes. What does it impact? And that is primarily just when the federal funds are obligated on a project. All of the federal approvals that are required for the project that is occurring, the same as if you were obligating all of the funds at the exact same time. So there are no shortcuts there. It doesn't get around any federal requirements for a federal aid highway project. At the same time, all of the state appropriations, SLA authority, et cetera, that is required for those projects, that is used at the time we AC a project or a phase of a project. So there are multiple authorities that we need to get or approvals from the Federal Aid Highway Administration for multiple phases of work. Every time we ask for one of those authorities to proceed or ATPs from the Federal Aid Highway Administration, we have to have either funds obligated on that phase of work, or we have to, or we can AC that phase of work. Primarily, we're doing that during construction because those are larger chunks of money and we're managing cash flow or limitation, as we'll see later on here, how that comes into play. Whenever we do that, all the same requirements on both the state side regarding legislative authority to use state funds and as match on the project and to spend those federal dollars, and the federal regulations apply to the project the same as if it was obligated. Okay, so what are some of the reasons why state DOTs use AC? Why has it been around since the late 50s? It really allows us to, yes, move projects, keep them on a timeline. If the project is ready to advance to the next phase, instead of having it sit around on a desk for a few months while something becomes available money-wise or limitation-wise, or to fit it into the plan, we can advance that and continue to have our engineering teams working on that project. And keep it on pace, and then hopefully, yes, avoid cost escalations, et cetera, at that time. In Alaska, of course, short construction seasons, we want to try to obligate things as they're ready to go rather than waiting on funding to be available immediately. All of this is, you know, all four of these items here that we're looking at really all come down to the same thing, which is it allows flexibility for us to keep projects moving, smooth out all of our portfolio across a range of years or months even, and continue to keep that stream of projects moving even when there are other issues that come up in the cash flow. Some of those examples of what can be issues in the cash flow are coming up here. Okay. When we're converting a project, this is then how we take it off of AC. And that is very simple. We simply ask when we have the funds available or the limitation available, two separate items that have to come together, then we can go to Federal Aid Highway Administration. They've already provided all the other approvals, And then we ask them to, yes, we're now going to obligate those federal funds. Once those federal funds are obligated, any state funds that were used up until that point, we then can submit to the Federal Aid Highway Administration for reimbursement with those federal funds that have now been obligated on the project. And we can do that partially or fully on a project at any time. So if we do have some projects, Juno Creek Bridge currently, it's $100 million of AC balance on it, right? We may not convert that all in one single year. We may do $30 million one year, $50 million another year. So we can do it in partial chunks. That's another benefit of AC. All right. More of the pros and cons.
Senator Rauscher has questions.
Yes.
Thank you. So just curiosity question, you may or may not have the answer, but $70 million that's in the supplemental, can that be used this year?
I'm not familiar enough with the $70 million in the supplemental that you're speaking of to answer that specific question.
All right, thank you.
If that is related to the legislative authority and match payments, then yes, with, I guess, through the chair to Senator Rauscher. Yes, my understanding is that when we receive additional limitation potentially during our August redistribution period and with that additional authority, it would allow us to obligate all of the federal funds and limitation and use all of that this fiscal year.
Quick follow-up.
Senator Rauscher.
So on the previous page there, I read something about costs more money if timing isn't exactly right and you have to switch. Shift in project timing and increases to the project cost. So is this going to increase project costs, even though that money wasn't utilized last year, or we're going to bring it on this year?
If because we do not have the state legislative authority to AC a project or move that project forward, then that could certainly delay bidding a project or advancing that project. And then when the project does have the SLA to move to that next phase of work, costs could increase.
Thank you.
Hypothetically. And it looks like my colleague, Lauren Little, has a comment.
Yeah, for the record, Lauren Little, Chief Engineer, Alaska DOT MPF, through the chair, Senator Rauscher, just to clarify, when we're talking about cost, we're getting at the idea that money today is cheaper than money a year from now. And so if we can use AC to advance a project and get bids in an earlier year, that potentially saves a total cost on the project. That's typically what we're talking about in terms of the cash flow management on AC usage.
All right, thank you.
Senator Tobin has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually have two that are completely unrelated, so I apologize. The first is, in your previous slide, you talked a little bit about how the Cooper Landing was AC'd, but yet it clearly hasn't been completed. Can you explain a little bit about how we've AC'd that project, but yet we've seen such incredible cost overruns that has led to it not coming to completion?
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, yes, we can't move, I guess, the project is advancing. You cannot put AC on a phase of work unless it is certified by engineers as being ready to advance to that phase of work. And that is one of the things that requires Federal Aid Highway Administration approval. So only a project that has advanced through design or is ready for construction and certified by our engineers and approved by Federal Aid Highway Administration would it be eligible for that AC to move to that phase. So of course, these constructions, a lot of Cooper Landing, a project that size, has multiple years of construction going on. And there are reasons why we may delay certain aspects of that because of other cash flow issues, because you can't just AC every single thing because you still want to manage the risks that you brought up earlier and we'll look at a little bit later. And looks like Ms. Little has.
Yeah, just one more thing. Through the chair, Senator Tobin, we do actually have a slide on sort of some of those larger projects and how we kind of manage that cash flow impact on the STIP later that may help illuminate that as well.
Hello? Senator Tobin.
Thank you. And that'd be helpful as, you know, there's many large projects that are being proposed, Safer Seward and some others, and I have significant fear about the risk we're exposing ourselves to. My follow-up question is more just about the very first slide talked about the STIP. And one of the things that the FHWA has indicated that having the conversion timelines is something we should be publishing so people know. Is that going to be included in this rolling STIP process?
I do not know if that will be. Generally, the only thing, sorry, to Senator Tobin, through the chair, Senator Tobin, and for the record, Adam Moser, unsure how we would do that because the STIP is constrained to generally 4 years, and we are required to show AC that we carry over multiple years. Conversions are in there because we must show also the conversion and obligation of those federal funds. Beyond the 4 years of the STIP, though, we are trying to model out and plan for that, but that is not contained in the STIP unless we were to publish a STIP that contains additional years beyond the 4 year limit. Moving on, I think we covered how conversion works there. And so a little bit more on the pros and cons here, and this is where we get a little bit more into the risk side. So the pros, yes, we can keep our schedules. If it's in the STIP, it's ready to go, we can move that forward. If we have all the other federal requirements are met, that portfolio efficiency helps smooth it out and helps us keep things on schedule. So we're not tied to where Congress has been. And one of the issues I will go back and kind of say where we've used generally two uses of AC that we use regularly, the planned AC, which is in the STIP and programmed for multiple years. And then there's within a general fiscal year. And a lot of that has been because Congress at the federal level has not been able to pass a full year appropriations bill at the beginning of the federal fiscal year. And when they cannot do that, we do not receive all of our obligation limitation authority. We receive it in bits and pieces throughout the year. And the next slide is going to look at that a little bit more closer. So, but what that allows us to do, AC, is we can continue to keep projects moving, and we can work with Federal Aid Highway Administration to AC projects within that fiscal year. And once you receive the limitation from Congress, once they pass a four-year appropriation bill, then we can go back and convert those within the fiscal year. So it has no long-term fiscal constraint issues. It does not impact us fiscally over a multiple year time frame. It just allows us to keep projects moving forward while we await for Congress to pass a 4 year appropriation bill. And then the flexibility in funding at conversion, this is one I would like to highlight, especially on larger projects. Of course, NHPP is one of our National Highway Performance Program, something a large pot of money for us, $350 million a year coming to the state. But a lot of projects are seeking that funding. We can AC a large project on the NHS using that funding as AC, but when it comes time to convert, we can use more boutique or more specialized funding programs, more restrictive funding programs, where those federal dollars are harder to spend. But we may find out along the way that, hey, we can use this special fund type, which then frees up those NHPP dollars, the more general or easier to use dollars, for other projects in the state. So that's a really nice tool that AC allows us to do, is we can move that project forward, and then we can figure out which specific federal fund type is most appropriate to use at a later time. On the con side here, yes, the exposure to the state financing, if we're not able to obligate those federal dollars on that project, that is a risk, certainly. Now, our balance of AC, it does not always directly correlate specifically to expenses that are hitting the state budget, because oftentimes there's a lot of lag between getting a authority to proceed from the Federal Aid Highway Administration, putting a project on AC, whether that be $70 million or $100 million, you may not actually start construction and really incurring a lot of costs on that project until the next construction season. So months and months could go by before expenses begin to go up on that specific project. What we're trying to do is, yes, make sure we're converting. And there are certain things in federal regulation that require us to convert and bill federal highway along the way. Otherwise, on the federal side, those projects go inactive if we're not billing the Federal Aid Highway Administration on those projects that are actively being constructed. Risks of delayed conversion, yes. And certainly federal funding, I think, to Senator Toba's earlier question, yes, one of the certain risks is that if federal funding were to be truncated or significantly reduced to the state of Alaska, that is a risk of carrying a large AC balance. And then stakeholder confusion, it is a little bit more of a complicated process for us. Programming it in the STIP, I think also to Senator Tobin's question there on how that is handled in the STIP over multiple years beyond the STIP years, it takes a little bit more of a programming process and understanding to make sure you're managing that AC balance correctly and informing the public of how you're doing that. And to our final slide here. So if we look at how this all plays out in a general timeline, we receive our apportionment funding. These are the real revenue dollars up there in green, the NHPP I just mentioned earlier, a large portion of state funding, STBG, that is sub-allocated into population areas along the state and must be spent in those population areas. This is the MPO funding and AMATS funding for the large MPO and the smaller MPOs, and then even on down to populations that are above 5,000 to 50,000, and then rural areas. HSIP funding, that's our safety funding, CMAQ, et cetera. And then you get into these harder to use fund types as well, more specified funding programs. This next box with the light blue boxes, this is an example of how limitation has come to the state. And this is an example pretty much from last year, where because Congress was operating on CRs for most of the fiscal year, we only received $127 million in limitation for the first start of the first part of the federal fiscal year. So if we had large projects that were looking to advance, we could not we would not have a way of obligating those funds actually. We had to AC them. And then when we received the additional limitation, say in May or June of 2025 for $300 million, and then the final tranche of our limitation later on in the federal fiscal year, only then would we go back and then convert those funds and actually obligate those dollars. Because they were not programmed to be AC'd in the STIP, but we were able to work with Federal Aid Highway Administration. They understand that it's best to keep those projects moving, and it's just simply because the federal government hasn't provided us the limitation that we need to use our appropriation or appropriated dollars, and therefore we're able to do that in a fiscal year. And then, of course, August redistribution, that's just an example amount there where we would expect to have additional limitation brought to the state so that we could spend additional appropriation dollars.
Senator Tobin has a question.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize. There's a lot of acronyms on this particular slide. Can you walk us just through and just looking at the green block and help the public and us here on the dais understand what are these funds and what are the typical uses for these funds and whether they're flexible for other uses or not?
Yes, certainly. Through the chair, Senator Tobin, NHPP is a National Highway Performance Program funding, and that is dedicated funding to go to the national highway system. So these are the higher classified routes, Parks Highway, the Glen Highway, also from our ferry terminals, so even here, Eagan and Juneau, et cetera. These are high classification roads, higher traffic volumes, considered to serve national security purposes, major economic corridors, et cetera. STBG is our most flexible source of funding that we receive, and that is most sought after. It can go to the lower classified roads, local roads that are still federal aid eligible, though. This is what we run our community transportation program out of, that we solicit projects from communities in Alaska. They receive this STBG funding on those projects. STBG, it is also allocated then into population segments. So this is the money that goes directly to MPOs, and those levels are generally set by the Federal Aid Highway Administration through formula as well. All of this is established in formula under Title 23 at the federal level. HSIP is our safety program that is dedicated funding that goes to safety projects across the state. It is a very detailed technical analysis to select those projects to prove that, yes, this project will most likely reduce crashes, and then projects become eligible for that safety funding. CMAQ is congestion mitigation and air quality funding. That is for our areas in the state that have air quality non-attainment, specifically the Fairbanks area. And then Anchorage is a maintenance area for non-attainment, and they are also eligible to receive CMAQ funding. And so that money gets split between projects in the Anchorage area and the large Fairbanks area where they have those air quality issues. NHFP, National Highway Freight Program funding. This is specifically tied to freight corridors that we have designated in our freight plan. Our Alaska State Freight Plan is found in our long-range transportation plan and must be updated every 4 years. Carbon reduction funding there is specific under IIJA, our current transportation bill. And that is for any project that will reduce transportation-related emissions. PROTECT is a very long acronym for a very long title of the project, but it is essentially resiliency projects that you're going to do something above and beyond on your highway project to make it more resilient to natural disasters. So that could be increasing the size of a culvert, raising the bridge height, widening a bridge to so it can handle increased water flow underneath it, et cetera. Those type of projects, that's what PROTECT money is dedicated for. And then there's the metro funding here is just planning funds that go to the MPOs. It's dedicated planning funding for the MPOs in the state.
Thank you, Mr. Moser. Senator Stedman has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't catch what STBG stands for or HSIP stands for.
Yes, sir. Through the chair, Senator Stedman, STBG is Surface Transportation Block Grant Funding. So that is the Surface Transportation Block Grants. And while they are called grants, it is a portion just like every other fund type here on the list. HSIP is Highway Safety Improvement Program funding. And so, yep, just the Highway Safety Improvement Program for safety funds.
Very good. We'll take this opportunity. I need to pass the gavel to my vice chairman so that I may attend a bill hearing, but it looks like Senator Keel and Rauscher are in the queue. I'll return shortly.
Senator Keel.
Thank you. So as we look from left to right here, safe to assume that these limitations don't run through the green categories in order. They're a slice of this and a slice of that. You're nodding yes. So then as I look at this example of a year, we're 20 million short or 21 million, depending which number you use, right? What is our expectation? How does that tend to work? Do we just need to program a little short, figure in the feds aren't going to come up with all of it? Where's the delta?
So through the chair, Vice Chair Tobin, to Senator Keel, August redistribution is generally where we try to capture that additional limitation. And because of things happening at the federal level and additional money there that's in the U.S. Department of Transportation, there have been multiple years now over the last two transportation bills where significant amounts of this limitation authority has been unspent by USDOT, and then they redistribute that to the states. So that has allowed us to really capture the amount of limitation to go after and try to use the vast majority of the apportioned funding that we receive in any given year. If we do not have the large August redistribution of limitation to the state, then what you do is you have those apportioned dollars. They are generally good for obligation for 3 years after the year that the state receives those. So they just carry forward into the next fiscal year, and then you're able to spend those dollars on projects. So there's not a risk to the state there, but that's what we try to do, and that's why August redistribution and planning for it is such a big deal, is because it does allow us to get the maximum use of those federal dollars that have been apportioned to the state.
Senator Keel.
Thank you. So when the August redistribution comes around, we often hear it talked about as other states weren't able to use all their money. We got some of what they might have had coming. But the way this slide and your answer presented is that that's our chance to come close to all of our money. We're not actually getting what anybody else gave up.
Yes, through Vice Chair and to Senator Keel, it is not the real dollars. I think it's important to remember that August redistribution allows us to spend the real dollars that we already have. It is not transferring any real apportionment or dollars from one state to another. It is, if one state is saying, we don't have the projects to deliver at the end of our fiscal year that could use the limitation that we currently have, and therefore they have to show that to the Federal Aid Highway Administration, and the Federal Aid Highway Administration would say, okay, you're probably not going to be able to use your money. We don't want it to go to waste. We will redistribute that to a state that shows us that they're able to spend it. And so we have been successful, certainly last year, in showing Federal Aid Highway that we have projects, we can use that additional limitation if you provide us with it. And they did provide that at tune of $183 million or in limitation. That then allows us to, yes, use in, say, fiscal year 25 and $183 million of apportionment that we have that we would not have been able to use without that additional limitation.
One more.
Follow up.
Thank you. So, but just to be clear, even if we didn't get that additional limitation authority in the August redistribution, did I understand you correctly? We still have a few years during which we get to spend everything that comes in that upper left yellow box, the apportionment?
Yeah, yes, through the vice chair to Senator Keel. Yes, the most often we would try our best to make sure that any funds that are at risk of lapsing were spent earlier in the year. We don't want to wait till the very end of the fiscal year to spend those. And then hopefully most of those dollars, real dollars, the apportionment that we had would carry forward if we did not have the limitation to spend those.
Thank you.
Senator Rauscher.
Yeah, thank you, through the chair. So I was wondering, are these available every year?
Through the vice chair to Senator Rauscher, these, when you say these, what are you referring to?
Dollar amounts along the apportionment memo section.
Ah, yes, sir. So, Senator Rauscher, those apportionment dollars up top, they are dictated by formula as set out in the one, a transportation funding bill at the federal level, and then Title 23. This is the last year of IIJA currently. So we're looking for the federal government does need to take action before next federal fiscal year to either ensure that we're receiving this the same level of funding or provide direction and legislation to change that level of funding coming to states. But under a transportation bill, this is what we've been receiving roughly for the last 5 years under IIJA.
Follow up.
So under Protect, $19 million. Coming from my district, Glen Highway, Valley, Mat-Su River, Talkeetna, Mudslide at 94, Mile 94 and onward. Has that money been utilized for any of that? Is there any left to be utilized for that? Has it all been spent, or where are those in the skip there?
Yes. Through the vice chair to Senator Rauscher, the STIP will be the place to look for where we're programming those PROTECT funds that we have still available. We have been very successful in using those. And, of course, in Alaska, as you've illustrated with your examples, it is not hard to find projects that are eligible and could use additional resiliency on them. Much of this has went to a reconstruction project on the Dalton Highway that was severely impacted by melting permafrost. And we were used a large chunk of it there. But future projects, I would, yes, as you, when you get the new copy of the new STIP, that is where you'll see any future PROTECT funds programmed.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Rauscher. I do have just a question, and I apologize. It's something that Commissioner Anderson said in a previous hearing, and I'm just unclear about what he was trying to communicate. But he inferred that we should wait until the LNG project was up and running so we could pay down our AC, and indicated that we needed a big construction cycle when all of our contractors were busy to pay down our AC balance. Can you help unpack that a little bit? I just don't understand what he's trying to indicate or say.
Vice Chair, I personally, I'm not knowing the context, able to speak to that, but I will pass it off to Ms. Little.
For the record, Lauren Little, to the chair, I think what was intended there was, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty around the LNG potential impacts on the workforce, right? Is it going to soak up all of the available construction and resources in the state? And if that happened, what would that mean for our federal aid highway program? Would it drive costs up? Would it? And so an alternative that we could have on the back burner is that we could use a couple years of AKLNG construction to use a chunk of this apportionment to pay down those AC balances, knowing that our workforce has a healthy, you know, sustainable place that they're getting funding from, and we're not competing for resources directly. So I think that was the intent. It's simply scenario planning for if the AKLNG line were to come through. We've got some ideas for how we make sure that the workforce stays healthy, but we're also not all competing for the same group of people, essentially.
And to follow up on that, would that mean that by carrying such a heavy AC balance that we have a potential that we might not have more projects in future years because the balance can only go so high?
and then we sort of kind of tap out and we're not able to put new projects or deploy new projects. Is that a risk or a possibility?
Through the chair, no, I would not foresee that as a risk. Even in a large AC payback scenario, the conversations we've been having are, are there areas of the state that won't be as heavily impacted by construction that we would still sort of prioritize some federal aid investment down, say on the Glenn Highway that's not really in that AKLNG corridor. So this is all just scenario planning to make sure, we've thought of all the things for when that AKLNG decision comes through and starts soaking up resources. We've got a plan. That's all that conversation was about.
Thank you. Please proceed.
And I believe that was, for the record, Adam Moser, the last slide, and I turn it over to Ms. Little and Doug Colwaite.
Thank you. For the record, Lauren Little. So getting back to your earlier question, Senator Tobin, when we start looking at the STIP, there are some large projects within the STIP, some, large group in the $100 to $250 million range and a handful that are in the greater than to $250 million range. And so how do we sort of manage that impact? We've been very successful as a department in taking these long linear highway projects and breaking them into chunks. So, for example, if we take the Dalton Highway milepost 104 to 144 reconstruction, if you go into the STIP, you'll see that there's three planned construction packages that are in the, $30 to $80 million individual range so that we can kind of manage that individual year impact on the STIP. Same plan for some of these longer horizon projects like the Safer Seward Highway. We have a strategy of essentially one, maybe two construction packages per STIP, so that we're managing that individual project impact over the whole program. We don't want one project to soak up all of the funding in the STIP. We want, a healthy program both geographically as well as a mix of small projects, large projects, bridges, highways, variety of scopes. And so that's sort of the strategy there to manage those impacts. You mentioned the Cooper Landing Bypass project. That's another one that we've staged over time. Obviously, the flip side of that is, as we talked about earlier, the time-money relationship, right? As time goes on, certainly a lot of these projects, we saw that huge inflationary bubble that happened post-COVID. And so a lot that did really kind of recalibrate a lot of our cost estimates and how we needed to sequence these projects in the STIP.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think Ketchikan Viaduct project, did it disappear or just didn't get on this list for the 250 plus?
Through the chair, I'm not sure exactly how we selected these specific ones. I'd have to go look at the STIP to know exactly where Ketchikan Viaducts ended up. But I know we do have it in the 10-year plan with multiple stages over the next several years to get that one completed.
Before it falls down.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Stedman. I feel the same way about the Glenn Highway Rehabilitation Project. I hope this is in order of priority because that is well before West Susitna, which I do know uses our most flexible funding source, which is very disappointing, I personally feel. Please proceed.
Okay, so sort of following on to AC, so AC is one way to advance projects. Another way that we can do that is state funding up front and then federalizing the project later when we have a detailed construction cost estimate, a better handle on schedule. Certain projects, it's very hard to know up front what they're going to cost, how long they're going to take. But the decision to federalize, at the end of the day, that's taking a project that we've been advancing under state or local funding and converting it to a federal highway funded project. And so typically, any costs we incur before federal highway authorization are not paid back. There are some exceptions to that. We can enter into what's called a PE, preliminary engineering at risk agreement with federal highways. And get their buy-off that, yes, we're following the federal process, we're doing all the things, and so they will count that towards the state match component later of the project. To my knowledge, we haven't done that yet because it does, and we'll get into a little later, it does eliminate some of the benefits of
sort of front-ending with state money and then converting when you're closer to construction. And then, of course, to spend federal highway dollars, the project must be in a STIP or TIP. We have to kind of go through all of that process before we can seek that federal authorization. So why would we federalize a project? Leveraging state dollars, of course, you know, if we can get a small state investment, get a project pretty far along, and then convert to federal, that ultimately reduces that overall state draw by using those federal dollars for the big cost component, the construction cost. Cash flow management, again, you know, similar to AC, this is a way to keep projects moving in this big scheme of federal framework and more needs than money. It opens up those federal funding categories. And then a really big one for us here in Alaska is on the environmental side. DOT is the lead federal agency. And so that's really key when you start doing environmental document approvals. Say, for example, you had a project that had a fairly sizable wetland impact associated with it. You're still going to have a core permitting process. If this is a federal highways funded project, it doesn't matter. DOT is the lead federal agency for that. That is our environmental document, and the Corps is participating in that, but we're following the federal highways, the NEPA regulations that are geared towards transportation projects, as opposed to NEPA regulations that are geared towards conservation of wetlands. And so there's just a lot of advantages on projects for DOT to be the lead federal agency, a lot of efficiencies there. And even if we start a project with state funding, if we know we're going to federalize it down the line, we just simply follow that lead agency process, and we have a pretty well-established and streamlined system for the NEPA approvals. So, you know, some when we choose to federalize, a lot of times we are federalizing later on in a project. We don't like to have cost surprises, but there's a lot of projects that it's really hard to know up front. When you start out a project, you may not have the full definition of what the public needs it to do, what the agencies are concerned about. By starting with state funds, we're able to get through a lot of that legwork up front and come to the federal program with a high level of certainty on costs and schedule, which makes the STIP programming side of it, all of that much smoother. Some recent examples of that, there was a longstanding state appropriation for bridges. This allowed us to take, oh gosh, the Rex Bridge on the Parks, the Johnson River on the Alaska Highway, Robertson and Gerstle on the Alaska Highway, a couple of bridges in Nome, some bridges in Cordova, and start them with state funds. And for a relatively small state appropriation, we were able to get them to a very mature design because, and this will be on the next slide, but we can do a lot of things in parallel with state funding. As soon as you have the federal rules on the project development process, it becomes very waterfall, lots of stage gates. Pause there, stage gate slide is coming. Okay. Schedule risk from compliance gates. So when you have a federal aid project, you start it with an initiation for an authority to proceed through an environmental document. And only once you have a signed, completed environmental document can you seek approval to proceed through final plan specifications and estimates, so doing that more advanced detailed design. And then from there, you have to get a certain amount of work done, and then you have to seek authority to proceed through right-of-way acquisition and appraisals, or authority to proceed through utility relocations. And all of these have paperwork processing times. In a state-funded front end, you can be doing all of these things concurrently and save yourself a lot of that waterfall timeline lag. You're still complying with all the critical things the feds need you to comply with in terms of, yes, before we did construction, we have an approved environmental document. You know, the right-of-way acquisition still complied with all the federal rules, the Uniform Relocation Act. And then, of course, the Build America, Buy America, that's an absolute if a drop of federal dollars got put on the project, the whole project must comply with that. And so that kind of gets to when you time this. Some things that get a little harder when a project is federalized, procurement contracting constraints. FHWA has pretty good ways, paths forward. It's just the paperwork timeline, right? You may want to try something innovative. You've got to go through getting their buy-off, working it all the way up through headquarters. We have a little bit more flexibility here under AS36 to just say innovative procurement. There's commissioner and law approvals, and off we go. There's some administrative burden differences in the closeout timelines. Quite frankly, we're doing our state and federal projects in fairly similar systems, but certainly, there are more specific requirements in federal highways about when you need to engage certain things. The Build America, Buy America is probably the biggest one that does add cost and time, and even in some projects, feasibility. There are certain project elements that, like a current one is avalanche gates. The system that the state wants to use, it's going to require a waiver. There's just no domestically made systems that are equivalent. And that's just time and also hope to some extent. Those are very hard to get approved through the Federal Highway Administration. And then on the pre-construction compliance, the biggest one that's different between a state and a federal and a FHWA environmental is the Section 4F. This is a law specific to federal transportation agencies. So this is what we call Parks Plus. So parks, national refuges, as well as cultural historic resources, although there's some things built into the law that make that a little bit more streamlined. Those are the ones that if you have a project that has any feasible, reasonable, really feasible, and that's a broad scope in the sense of the Section 4F law to impacting a 4F resource, that's the alternative you have to choose. That there are certain projects where, the logical thing is to go and put it through, a state wildlife refuge, for example. And as soon as you go federal transportation law, that becomes extremely, extremely challenging to get through. Doug, did you want to chime in on anything there?
Yes, I could chime in through Vice Chair Tobin. Yes, there are some limitations, and yes, 4F applies to certainly cultural resources that are on the national list of historic places, and that can be a challenge. But the majority of information gathered during the state-funded process does transfer into the NEPA process. We do still have to follow the NEPA process as we've defined under our assignment program with federal highways. So we do have to follow all the steps that would be in our environmental procedures manual. But the information that we gather beforehand often translates quite quickly into that.
Senator Stedman.
Yeah, this is interesting to, go through the process. But from my perspective in my district, we get a lot more done avoiding the federal highway rules. Just give us a gravel road, 1.5, 2 lanes. Give us something to drive on. Because when we wait for these federal funded roads, they never materialize. And we can go back decades. So we're interested in give us some rudimentary access. We're very, very happy. We don't need I-5. We just need basic transportation. Because they never get built. And we can go and take a look at the roads and from Dixon Entrance to Yakutat for the last 50 years and have a discussion on that if you'd like sometime.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Stedman, certainly any detailed, I don't know specifically what standards might have been precluding progression under the federal program, but happy if you want to reach out and send those specifics, we can look into those.
Catlin Bay, the Road to Cake, Valner Bay. There's three right there. So we, what we want in Southeast is transportation. And, if we can't have a functioning marine highway system, we got to have some roads or something. But if we wait for this federal process, they never get built. And that would include Cross Baranof, the road into Canada, stuff that's never, ever going to get built, that still materializes from time to time. So, you know, it's I think this is probably more applicable to up in the rail belt arena, where you got a lot more traffic and other things going on, but for Southeast, it doesn't fit.
Please continue.
I gotta go. I got another meeting.
Goodbye.
For the record, Lauren Little. Just some recent examples of, so I mentioned the bridges earlier, but we also have three fairly recent projects that were all federalized for, well, two of them were for somewhat similar reasons. Wendell Avenue Bridge replacement, these all three were geobond projects. Actually, I can't remember if Fairview was geobond or just GF. It had both on it, I think. But they had large state appropriations for a variety of reasons at the time. Wendell Avenue Bridge, there was not sufficient funding for the construction costs by the time we got to construction. And so this project we actually federalized at the Construction Authority to Proceed request. And so we had to go back and quickly do a NEPA, National Environmental Policy Act document, as opposed to a state environmental checklist that the project had currently been operating under. We were able to complete that in a matter of months, have the project out to bid. That project has since been completed. And in terms of the timeline, you know, it added a few months to update those environmental approvals over to the new header, right, the NEPA and the National Historic Preservation Act instead of Alaska Historic Preservation Act. Do a little bit of this one did have a Section 4F, but it fit the de minimis. We were actually doing improvements to a park adjacent. And so proved that we could do that conversion fairly efficiently, updated our specifications to include the federal aid provisions instead of the state provisions. And then the Old Cease Highway reconstruction, this is one we hope to have in construction this year. This one was started, this was actually a Metropolitan Planning Organization priority, but it was just way more money than they could ever afford. You know, I think at the time it was estimated to be $15 million. This is one that the city of Fairbanks, it's their road. The design sort of evolved over the years, and ultimately it came down to, again, the state funding was not going to be sufficient for the costs associated with the project. It fit the surface transportation block grant funding we talked about earlier. And so instead, this one was federalized during the design phase, and we hope to have that in construction starting this summer. And then Fairview Loop Road was another one that the state dollars just didn't stretch to all the needs out there. And so ultimately we federalized that one. We hope to be completing the NEPA document on that here in the near future and within months, and advancing the first federal construction package of that here in the coming year as well. In addition to those bridge projects that we were able to get a lot of work done under the state funding before converting to federal, that really saved us a lot of time and helped us get to a good cost certainty, because bridge costs were certainly an area where we've seen a tremendous amount of cost inflation due to the steel more than anything. But also some of these bridges required very different foundation designs than what we're typically doing because of just the sheer size of them. It's not as simple as like, oh, yep, 36-inch drilled steel piles, off we go, you know, kind of our bread and butter design. They needed bigger spans, much more robust foundations, some unique aspects that would have made them really challenging to cost estimate, and could have had a lot of surprises on the federal program if we'd started down that path from the get-go, as opposed to getting those things known and then informing the federal program of, okay, this is the cost and the year we're going to be ready. And this is our last slide.
Thank you very much, Ms. Little. Are there any questions from committee members? Senator Keel has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was following until the last. We had a several slide conversation about how you can run various parts of the process in parallel instead of in sequence if you start with state funds and federalize later. But then I understood the last comment to be you reach different conclusions if you use the federal process in your planning. Why?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, the only time a different conclusion would potentially be derived is in the case of a Section 4F resource impact. So if you have an alternative that avoids a park, that is the alternative you have to choose under federal highways rules. Otherwise, we would not have necessarily a different outcome. We simply may have better informed final decisions. So I'm not entirely sure where I misled you there.
Senator Gill.
Okay, it's also possible I misheard or misunderstood. But, so then with regard to the 4F, if we were to use state funds to plan, do the initial environmental work and design something that did impact one of those Park Plus categories, pick a route with an impact, we could then use federal dollars to construct it with the impact?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, no. We would have to go back and completely reevaluate that decision of to impact that 4F resource with the federal lens on it if we had proceeded with state dollars. The reason Wendell was a little different is that the type of impact on the resource was actually a benefit to it. And so there's provisions in that Section 4F law that say, yeah, we don't want to prevent you from improving parks with federal highway funds. So it wasn't what we call a take under Section 4F. We weren't converting park property.
Thank you.
Any final questions, comments, Senator Keel?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With apologies for going backwards a little bit. We talked a lot about some of the advantages of advanced construction, especially in tri-year, and those seem very clear. And then we talked a little bit about some of the advantages and the risks of inter-year AC. And I guess the question is, you know, we have that chart talking about end-of-year AC balances. I think it was slide 4. And AC balances as a percentage of our total annual funding. Where is our cutoff? What presumably... and maybe this is an assumption you need to correct, DOT is not particularly interested in getting back to that 2006 level where we AC'd 190-some percent of our annual amount. What's the safe range?
Yeah, for the record, Adam Moser, through the chair to Senator Keel. I know that our director, Don Pannone, is working very closely with Office of Management Budget here and State Finances on that and making sure that we're managing that in line with what their expectations are. I think generally, you know, that would be a role for potentially – the legislature to play if they see a limit in that, but managing, again, getting contracts out in the street, trying to keep projects moving forward. At this stage, as you see, I think over the span, without a significant reduction in federal funding, this is quite manageable where we're currently at. And I don't think that, you know, we can look and see what's in the current STIP or coming out in the STIP. That's where you'd see that roadmap as to, is there a danger zone approaching with too much of an AC balance carried out. Thank you. Yep.
For the record, Andy Mills, legislative liaison for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Through the chair, Senator Keel, one thing I might add is one thing that governs this, and I've heard Don Pannone, our administrative services director, speaking to this. The AC balance is a function that's proportional. So again, as IIJA and other programs, service reauths have plussed up the program, there is a proportionality to an AC balance. There's no official policy that I'm aware of pretty much any other state we've looked at, although we do – I know Director Pannone has looked at what other states are doing as far as their AC use balances. And it's something to manage. I will note, and again, we were here last year in this committee with partners such as AGC talking about the need to increase what we're doing in our program to get more out on the street. And so certainly AC is a vital tool to ensure that if we're hearing from our partners, our policymakers such as yourself, that we need to do more, this is one of those tools that allows us to meet that demand that's out there to get more on the street.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I look at this, it doesn't look like advanced construction as a percentage of our annual funding appears to be in a danger zone at this point. I note that over the last 7-8 years, it seems to have crept up from about 40% to something like 75%. We don't have perfect lines on here. And so if we, depending on what happens with the federal transportation funding with the new bill that's starting to work its way through Congress, as we see the Infrastructure and Jobs Act money perhaps start to drop down, that percentage is, if we continue current practice, that percentage we're obligating seems to go up. And so I just want to make sure that we don't put ourselves into a fiscal pinch where all of a sudden we we're worried about having the capacity to put the projects on the street because we put too many of them on the charge account. And I don't know necessarily what that looks like, but I think that's something to keep a close eye on.
And again, for the record, Andy Mills, through the chair, Senator Keel. So last week, the commissioner and I were in D.C. meeting with a whole alphabet soup of federal agencies and our congressional delegation, and also at AASHTO, the American Association of State Highway Transportation Officials, basically other state DOTs. And in relation to the surface reauthorization, which is coming this September, I'll just, since we do have a moment of time, just say that AASHTO in general, of course, has advocated to policymakers in D.C. that the current levels at IIJA are essential for state DOTs to maintain their programs given. And a little call out to my chief engineer, the NHCCI is something we have testified previously, the National Highway Cost Construction Index, and the inflationary pressures that the construction industry has encountered being several times more than CPI, the Consumer Price Index, which most people have as their go-to benchmark. They've seen cost escalation. They've seen inflationary pressures on their home budgets. But that the construction industry is seeing significantly higher than that means that our program obviously is going to sort of fewer projects, right? So the effectiveness of that generational and transformational infrastructure program, it's not having the same sort of gains that were intended, at least given some of those, some of that erosion of the purchasing power. But all those states are going to their congressional members trying to explain that dynamic and explain that this has to be the new baseline. Otherwise, there's significant, if you take a program that is meeting the baseline that was even before IIJA and lower that, what that would mean to, various state assets. So I just want to make sure I convey that is a concern of every single state that they're communicating with their congressional members.
Further questions, comments? I have one question, and I apologize if the committee discussed this in my absence. However, I'm wondering how Alaska compares to other similarly situated states and how we use AC.
Yes, to Senator Bjorkman, Chair Bjorkman. For the record, Adam Moser. There is a report that we can get you. It is several years old now, but it was done, I believe, by National Highway Institutes or an associated organization at the national level looking at all different state DOT approaches to the use of AC, and it has data at least through 2018, I believe. There are certainly some states out there that have carried historically AC balances well above their annual apportionment received in revenue from the Federal Aid Highway Administration. I believe that we are in line with other states and not out of bounds with our current AC balance in relationship to apportionment. But we can get you some additional information on that.
Thank you. appreciate it.
Last call.
All right. Well, hearing and seeing no further questions or comments, do you all have anything that you'd like to wrap up with today? Well, thank you very much for being here. As there is no further business to come before the Senate Transportation Committee, we will wrap up for today and meet again on Tuesday of next week, March 10th. Our schedule will be forthcoming on Thursday, and we are adjourned at 2:44 p.m.